You're listening to Inside of You.
That's my job.
With Michael Rosenbaum.
That's right, Rob. You're listening to Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum. You know, are you having a good week, Rob?
Having a great week.
It sounded like Dan Aykroyd. You having a good week there, Rob?
I guess I hear it a little bit.
Do you? Are you just?
I'm just humoring you.
Yeah, actually. I've never really done a Dan Aykroyd. Did you ever notice Dan Aykroyd always does the same impression? Like his, whether he's in a serious movie or a funny movie, it's always, yeah, here we are. That's how I'm talking now. I'm being serious or I'm being funny.
Maybe that's just his voice. That's your phone. That's not my phone. That's definitely your phone.
Hey, we got a great guest today. This is probably one of my favorite podcasts ever. And you may not know this guy, but after this, you should. He's got a show called Finding Mastery. He's a sports psychologist slash many, many other things. He is a tremendously knowledgeable man.
Yeah, he worked with the Seattle Seahawks when they won the Super Bowl.
Yeah, it's the guy who jumped out of space.
Yep, the Red Bull space jump.
The Red Bull space jump, if you look it up. He was the guy who helped talk that guy who had claustrophobia and other issues. You know, he's claustrophobic being up in this little capsule, and Michael Gervais helped him figure it out, so he then made the biggest jump ever.
And then he talks about what it's like being the brother to Ricky Gervais.
Yeah, that's not true. He's not related to Ricky Gervais at all. But this guy is like, you know, this became real therapy. I think you're going to really, this is going to really help anybody out there with anxiety or depression or just like life shit and how to look at things in a different way. He's motivational, but he's realistic, and he has so much knowledge.
Yeah, you tried really, really hard to get a free therapy session.
I did. He was like, I don't want to do that. I don't want to. But, you know, we talked about some of his issues from a younger age. And just
you mostly tricked him into a free therapy session.
Yeah, I did.
Would have probably cost hundreds of dollars normally.
That's true. He was amazing. I really hope you listen to this and you'll get a lot from it. I know you will. Inside of You is brought to you by Policy Genius.
Do you have life insurance, Michael?
I do have life insurance, Rob. Do you?
I do not. I probably should.
Well, let me tell you something. Life insurance is important.
It's a little confusing, though.
Yes, it's very confusing. And there's 4 out of 10 people that don't have it because they're so confused by it. And what do they get? And what, you know, it is. It's a pain in the ass. And maybe you're one of those people that are confused by this, like me or Rob. But if anything were to happen, it's important that you and your loved ones are taken care of. Besides, life insurance rates are the lowest they've been in 20 years. The best time to buy is now. PolicyGenius.com. The easy way to compare life insurance online. In just 5 minutes, you can compare quotes from the top insurers to find the best policy for you.
When you compare quotes, you save money. It's that simple, Michael.
Policy Genius has helped over 4 million people shop for insurance and placed over $20 billion in coverage. They don't just make life insurance easy. They compare disability insurance, renter's insurance, health insurance. If you care about it, they can cover it.
So if you've been putting off getting life insurance like I have, there's no reason to put it off any longer. You can go to PolicyGenius.com to get quotes and apply in just minutes.
That easy, folks. You can do it right now while you're sitting here, and you should, because rates are their lowest, like I said, in 20 years.
It's Policy Genius.
The easy way to compare and buy life insurance. Michael Gervais, here he is.
It's my point of view. You're listening to Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum.
Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum was not recorded in front of a live studio audience. Michael Gervais, he brought his friend here today, Sully. Intern Sully?
Sure.
Sure. You can't hear him, but he's from Massachusetts. Massachusetts. How do you say it? Massachusetts. Massachusetts. He just called me an asshole. Sorry. He's a big boy. I thought he was mafia when you pulled up in your fancy car, and Michael, and he was with you, and I was like, Jesus, he looks angry. Are they pissed?
When we first met, he said, I don't need to say anything. Just say, that's Sully. Pass the salt, please.
Is that it?
Yeah, that's it.
Jesus. Look, it's good to have you on here. I'm going to be honest with you. Now we've had...
Are we starting here already?
I mean, we start going. We just start talking.
Already starting with, I need to be honest? Is that how we do it?
I mean, I'm always honest. Okay, Rob, my producer, who's 28 years old, can you believe that? He's got his shit together, you think. You think he's got no problems. He's got a fancy attaché case. Is that what you call it?
Fancy what?
Attaché case?
What are you talking about?
Have you ever heard of that word?
I have.
So why doesn't he know that?
I don't know.
I didn't know my producer was dumb. The fuck? No. But I'll be honest with you. We have musicians. We have actors. We have athletes. But I've never had
Uh-oh.
A sports psychologist. Is that what you call yourself?
Sometimes.
What else do you call yourself?
Yeah, no, that's it. I mean for the most part, you know.
You're much more than that.
That's what the trade and training, you know, right. That's where it's from.
The reason I had you on the show is because I'm a Jew and I wanted to save money on therapy.
Mm, it works that way, huh?
It works that way sometimes. Sully had a laugh at that. I'm excited to have you here.
Thanks, mate.
Because I deal with a lot of shit, and I know a lot of my listeners, and they might not be your listeners, but they will be, because you're a smart guy, and you're going to help with issues and problems, and this is why people come to you.
Yeah, well, so and for clarity, it's sport and performance, right? So I actually spend more time than you would imagine in the arts.
In the arts?
Yeah.
Really?
Yep. Musicians, for sure. I mean, you think about what they need to do.
They have to get in front of people.
Oh, just sing. But the...
Well, you asked me. I just answered it. Yeah. No, I wasn't even being a dick.
No, but the vulnerability required for that, to really search your, to do music well, like to innovate and really do it well, you got to go to places. And so that's a big part of, you know, the path of becoming your very best. And sport performance psychology is the science and the art of how to use your mind to be able to be you in any environment.
All right, let's go back. See, I want to go back because I want to see how you got involved in this, and I want to see what your childhood was like. How do you become this guy who coaches people and helps them and uses spirituality and uses meditation and uses all these things to help them be the best they can be? How fucked up were you as a child?
So that's the question that's being begged, isn't it?
Because yeah. I just, you know, I'm dysfunction. You look at me, you could see it. I look in your face and you're like, this guy's fucked already. You don't even know me.
It's perfect.
You look at my house, I'm 45 years old. I live like a child. I have toys and jerseys, and I can't. I'm 45 and I'm not married and I'm single and I have anxiety now. It came out of nowhere. I get some depression. I see therapy. I do all these things. And you're like, why? But then people say, why would a Seattle Seahawks superstar have these issues? Why wouldn't he be so confident? Why wouldn't a musician have this confidence? They have everything going for them.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so anybody that's going to push into the edge of whatever, fill in the blanks. Mm-hmm. By definition, if you're on the edge, you don't have it together. And if you want to become your very best, if you want to understand the richness of what lies dormant inside of you, because it lies dormant for most of us, then you got to get to the edge. And so therein lies why training the mind and conditioning the mind is an important part of the process. So I grew up on a farm. And my parents,
where?
Yeah, in Virginia. My parents dropped out. So they grew up in the city. And then they said, in essence, like, we got to get out of the rat race. So more of a hippie thing than anything. So they moved to the country. I was chopping wood and carrying water at the age of 8, trying to figure out how to heat the house. And, you know, we didn't have running water. It was cold, you know, when we're outside. That being said, I've realized that can paint an image of something far worse than it was. It was loving. It was wonderful. It was the four of us. I have a younger sister. And it was just this little nice little incubated place.
Like a lot of support, a lot of, as a child, I mean, were you homeschooled?
No. See, it paints that picture, right?
Yeah,
now, we were out.
Image.
It was a dirt road. So I grew up in dirt roads.
You like country music?
No. You know, I mean, we were hillbillies.
Jesus.
It was hillbillies.
But you don't like country music?
I love music. Anything get my heart to thump, get my head to move, you know, like whatever. Like, I love
Try
music.
Some ecstasy.
Yeah.
That will really get your body going.
Yeah.
Sully's been there. No, I don't do that as much.
Yeah.
Seldom. Frequently.
Anymore.
If you're at Burning Man, you might pop a few mollies, but everything's controlled. You know, it's not controlled, actually.
No, it's wild.
It's wild, and yeah. It's free, and it's dangerous.
Whatever you tell yourself, though.
So your parents were cool. They were nice. They
loved
you.
Yeah, they were good.
Did your dad say, Michael, I love you?
Yeah, I knew that, and I felt it. And my dad was ripping and running, though, where I had a hole where I didn't have enough of my dad involved. And so he was, looking back, workaholic, alcoholic, addiction to other things as well.
Is it just as bad as being an alcoholic or workaholic?
Same thing.
It's the same thing.
Oh, yeah, for sure, same thing. Yeah.
Describe that. It's just someone who they don't even realize it's such an addiction that they don't know that they're working constantly and they can't stop.
Yeah, well, so what addictions do, or dependency or abuse of anything, really, could be ketchup, it doesn't matter what it is, it fills this hole to be real, because we're filling the empty space as opposed to listening to the empty space. And we all have pain, period, flat out. We all have suffering.
You have pain?
Oh, yeah.
You deal with issues? Do you deal with pain? Do you have a psychologist?
Yeah.
You do?
I've got a full-on tribe of people that they would say, Mike, you're one of the most intense people I know. And Jesus, dude, lighten up and this and that and the other. And so, yeah, like I've got a tribe of people that have my back. And
I just thought of something funny.
Yeah.
I just thought of something. Can you imagine you going into your therapist and saying, he's like, what's your problem? I'm like, well, I need the confidence to give other people the confidence to be confident.
Yeah.
What?
No, we sorted that out a minute ago.
Yeah, exactly.
But I'll tell you, there's nothing comfortable and settling about being uncomfortable. And that's required. So I'll tell you, I've come from an anxious place. So if there was a spectrum between depression and anxiety, and I was just fall on one side or the other, it'd be on anxiety.
I would agree with me.
Yeah,
not with you because I don't know you,
yeah,
but me.
Right, yeah. And some people fall on the depressed side. And so I fall on the anxious side. And so because of that, there's things that come with it. You know, working too much, worrying too much, thinking too much. And that's the spectrum that I fall on.
It's interesting. I have so many questions. I have so many issues. I think of all these things. I just saw my psychiatrist a few days ago.
Mm.
And for the first time, I was seeing this cognitive behavioral therapist for, you know, I've been starting to see him, and he's talking about seeing things positively when you know, instead of always negative, because your brain's programmed to think negative. This is going to happen. This is going to happen. This is going to happen. I'm going to pass out. I'm going to do stand-up comedy. I'm going to fucking pass out. He's like, have you ever passed out? I'm like, no, but I've come close. But have you? No. So you haven't. So that's not really going to happen. It hasn't happened. It's not going to happen because it hasn't happened. And I'm like, fuck you. What does that mean? It could
happen.
Right. And so it's working reality. It's kind of trying to take reality and say, this is the reality, and you're convoluting that.
Yeah. I mean, good job. Right? Because the frontier is the mind. It's the most amazing freaking thing in the world. We don't know where it exists, how much thoughts weigh, where they go, where they start. We have no idea. But we know that they matter and they're real and they shape the texture of our lives. So I've spent a lot of time asking people this question. How many of you, like in a small room or a large room, in my mind, it's like 200 to 400 people. And I'll tell you about why I'm in those situations later. But how many of you have formally trained your mind? And now these are rooms with highly successful people. They're doing it. They're doing everything that they hoped they would do. They've got that job in their career. And less than 10% raise their hand to formally train their mind. So most people, you included likely, have gotten to where they are in their life without formally training the most powerful operating system in the world. So if you think about the mind and the brain, let's try to separate them. They're not easily separated, but let's try to separate mind, body, and brain for just a moment so that we can integrate them. That's the goal, right? To integrate the thing together so that we can be fluid and progressive in the way that we live our life.
And
fluid.
Even your body. So, I mean,
yeah,
your brain, so you don't feel numbness and anxiety and all these things. It's like, right?
It was one of the origins of yoga.
Right.
To do all the physical movement so that you can actually sit still long enough and pay attention to the inner experience.
Do you do yoga?
Yeah. Yeah.
Every day?
No. I'm not like that.
Do you recommend yoga?
Yeah, well,
I have back issues.
So this is what I would say about yoga, is that if you are naturally a limber type person, go lift some heavy weights. If you're naturally like inclined to lift heavy weights and be strong and get strong quickly, you probably need some yoga. So the yin yang is an important thing. If we only go to our strengths, we find out that there's a double-edged sword there as well. So we want to double down and triple down on our strengths, but also have a counterbalance to everything, mental, physical, whatever. But go back to the mind, brain, and
mind
body.
Mind and brain separating, right.
So the brain is like this, it's not like, it's 3 pounds of tissue in our brain, in our skull, that we have no idea really how it works yet, but it's powerful. And if you think about, to oversimplify, if that's the hard drive and the mind is the software, and if that's an easy way to kind of get an image, I think that that's the simplest, dumbest down version of how this unbelievably complicated, textured, nuanced experience that is happening right now for both of us is working. And if you don't program the software, the brain will win. The brain will run it. And the brain's designed to survive. It's designed to scan the world and find the dangers, to your point earlier.
Right.
But that's not your mind. Your brain is designed for that. Your mind's not designed for that. Your mind is programmed by your parents, by Muscle and Fitness magazine.
And it's also genetic. I mean, there's a lot, you know. Well, your brain,
not your mind.
Not your mind, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So they say something, tell me if I'm wrong here, I read something, and I'm not a huge reader, if you have a feeling you are. 40% of our brain is genetic. 40% of how we think we can't change. So if I have manic depression, my mom's crazy as fuck. My sister's insane. My brother has it. I mean, it's just endless pill popping, just so far out there. Let me give you an example. My mother called me one day, and she said, Michael, she's in tears. Gordon and I, Gordon's my stepdad. Gordon and I got into a fight.
I'm in a hotel. I had 3 Valium.
Not that you give a fuck.
And hung up. That's my mother. The next day she calls me and she's like, hey, how are you, sweetie? So this is what I come from. So I know that I'm one of those people that probably have 40 to 50%. I'm kind of fucked.
Mm.
The other 50, I rely on people like you, Michael,
yeah,
to help me get through it and think right and separate the mind and the brain.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, though, it's not that staunchy, rigid kind of, you know, psychology got a bad rap for a long time, right?
Cause why?
You sneak it. Well, it was born out of the medical model. So the medical model focuses on what's broken. Like you break your arm, well, let's understand it, right? So you only go to the doc when you're broken.
Right.
And then so psychology was born out of there. And so you'd sneak in the front office, your front door, and then scurry out the back door, you know, after a 45-minute session. It's not that anymore. That's long ago. That's not what it is anymore. Because there's a new field, the new science, about 40 years old, 60 years old now, which is the study of how the most exceptional people in the world work. And that's where I was orientated toward. And so it's no longer this idea that it's the study of the broken. It's how do you condition, train your mind to go the distance.
And you really think you could change anyone's mind. You could make anyone. Because I'm reading this book called The Feel Good Book. Feel Good?
I don't know.
Well, it was a bestseller, Michael.
Sorry about that. Yeah,
I mean,
maybe I'm not reading as much as you think.
Maybe not. The Feel Good. Yeah. I mean, I'm on page 40, so I've got a long way to go. It's a 400-page book at least. But I skim it. And I see the important things when there's like, you know, charts and things. I'm like, oh, I should probably look at these charts.
Pictures.
Yeah, but I'm looking at it and it just has all these things of like how we think negatively and how we think. It said something like, I'm sure you're one of those people who's thinking, you can't help me. I can't be helped. I'm one of those people who's reading this going, no matter what you say, you can help all these other people, but you can't help me.
Yeah.
Is that common?
Yeah.
Like you can't be, I can't be helped. You can't, you're not going to say something or make me train my brain a different way. It sounds ridiculous.
Well, there's a cynical view of life. And so if you're a cynic, anything kind of falls into that category. Right. And then there's people that just kind of have given up on themselves, you know, like kind of a hopeless, I don't know if it's within me to do that.
Right.
And so I don't know. I mean, but it sounds so campy, like you can train somebody's mind. No, you have to do it.
You have to do the work.
I can't do it.
Right.
I don't even want to do it for you. Like, forget about it. If you want to do the work, great.
Well, I want to do the work,
yeah,
but I need to be directed.
No. That's wrong, too.
It's wrong.
Yeah. You've got to feel enough pain in your life to say, I'm sick and tired of being fucked
up. But
tired.
I am.
No, well, then you go do the work.
I go to cognitive behavioral therapy.
Good.
I went to a psychotherapist. I'm taking a new antidepressant that focuses mostly on anxiety. I just started it. I thought I was having anxiety attack when we started this thing.
Did you?
Yeah, I thought. I was like, I'm a little anxious. If anybody could help me, it's him.
I'm perfect.
I've had a lot of success in my life. I've done a lot of things, but I think I never really thought about them. I got nervous. I got things, but it helped. The anxiety and all these things were a healthy balance and it helped me and it programmed me. But I don't know. I got to a stage where I think sometimes I'll let it get the best of me, or sometimes even nobody knows it, I still feel it. And I'm like, why do I feel it? It's making me less of a man. It's making me less of a talent. It's making me less, it's just impeding me from being the best I can be. And it fucks with me. And I know a lot of people feel like that. They're like, oh, you know, what is this? And how do we get that out of your mind? You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I'm nodding my head because one, you're doing it. So you're already in it. You're figuring some stuff out. Like that's it. It's not more complicated than that. But at the same time, that gap between the man or the woman that we are wanting to be and the way we feel inside, the further the distance between those two, the unhealthier that moment. And if those moments add up over time, the person becomes really unhealthy. If you want to be fill in the blank, loving and kind, whatever, or aggressive and this, that, and the other, but inside you're scared and you're angry and you're holding back and bitter, then whatever that gap is a measure of health. So alignment is the big game. Can you line up your thoughts, words, and actions, period? And if you can line those things up, is good shit happens. Like what?
That's amazing. Go. Keep talking.
No, that's
this
it. But so you've got to figure out what thoughts are optimized for you in the man that you want to be. That's deep. No one can give you that work. You have to do that work, that lonely based work. Right. And so there's great thinkers of the world that have been wrestling this for a long time.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Hey, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
Did you read the book As a Man Thinketh?
Yeah, it's good.
Mm-hmm. It's very short, too.
Yeah, it is.
That's why I liked it.
Yeah, me
25
too.
Pages.
Yeah.
But it just speaks volumes in these few pages.
Mm-hmm.
And the way it speaks to me is just like, you know, I see it. I want to be like, you know, it talks about the weak man and his, you know, he has these weak thoughts. So he's the poor man and this, all this. And the straw man has these, you know, these good thoughts and I'm going to do this. And I'm trying to figure that out. I'm trying to balance my life with health and work and
there's no balance. Forget about it. Like I think it's a mythical ridgeline that does not exist that drives people crazy.
But it talks about purpose is what I was getting.
Purpose is different.
See, he talks about
purpose is very different.
Yep. Yeah, he says you have to have purpose. And I thought to myself, oh my God, because I look at Rob and I've talked about this before, and you go, he's 28 years old, but Rob has a child and this is purpose, and I have to make money and I have to be strong and I have to give him love and affection because that's my purpose, my child. I don't know about his wife. I don't know about that, but she seems all right. But I look at my life and I thought, okay, purpose. What's your purpose? And I go, holy fuck. I don't exactly know my purpose. Well, I like making people laugh and feel good about themselves. Is that purpose?
Sure.
It is?
Yeah, for sure it can be.
But there's got to be something deeper than that.
Well, I don't know. The purpose has to be bigger than you.
What's your purpose, Mike?
Yeah, well, it's pretty clear for me. Like every day is an opportunity to create a living masterpiece. That's what I live by. The purpose, the mission, if you will, is, so that's, I would call that a philosophy first, right? So there's two bookends, philosophy and vision/purpose. And then the mission that I have here is to help one in five people. First in a company, maybe a team, right? And then in a company, if I'm working in a corporate world and maybe regionally, maybe nationally, maybe internationally, one in five people to learn how to condition their mind so they can be in the present moment more often. That's it. Because I know that if all of us have five friends, so if I can help one, there's going to be like a pebble in the pond ripple that takes place. And all the good stuff in the world happens in the present moment, period. That's where high performance happens. That's where love happens. That's where connections happens. That's where adjustments take place, where artistry takes place in the present moment. So if I feel like I'm so grateful to learn from extraordinary doers and then I've spent, and thinkers, and I've spent too many years studying the science of it to be able to not pass that on and challenge the shit out of people in the right way and support them and love them in the right way so that they can learn how to be present. The last thing I'm going to do is give people advice. It does not work.
But you're insinuating, you said something that struck me. You said being present.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that's a huge component?
Oh, yeah. I mean, go back to how the mind's working. How our brain is working is that the natural organized way that the brain works is to scan the world and find what's dangerous. Our ancestry gave us that gift. And then so if that's the case, then our mind, if it's over-programmed or over-influenced by the brain, we're going to start thinking about things that could go wrong as well. And so all of that busyness pulls us into the future, pulls us into away from now. We don't even know if it's necessarily the future. So to condition your mind, the natural state of the mind is like a drunk monkey. Have you heard that?
No.
For some of us, it's double-fisted. It's all over the shop. Right? Yeah. Curious, sloppy, easily, you know, easily distracted. So a disciplined mind is rare.
Right.
And that's the mind that can come back to now.
Like Mr. Or, Miyagi. You know,
yeah, exactly.
Miyagi
yeah.
was disciplined.
Yeah, right.
He wasn't distracted.
That's right.
He was focused on his trees.
Yeah.
His bonsais.
Right here, right now.
Right.
So that would be a form of mindfulness training. And so mindfulness, you use the word meditation, which I don't use often. Mindfulness, because meditation comes with baggage. Nothing wrong with it. It's a beautiful ancient practice. But in the alpha competitive worlds that I live in and work in, that word has, it's got too much behind it. There's too much luggage on it. So we use the word mindfulness.
Mindfulness.
You can hyphenate it, mindfulness training.
Mindfulness training.
And so training is an accepted thing. There's only three things as humans we can train. You can train your body, you can train your craft, and you can train your mind. That's it. And the folks that are on the tip of the arrow, they very clearly, most of them, there's no kind of one single theme for all of them, but there's most of them say, I'm not leaving one of the three legs to the stool up to chance. The mind is important, so I want to train it. Like, I want to be great.
It's weird because you say, I don't give advice. How do you go? I mean, I know we jumped from childhood. We were going into your childhood, which I liked, because how do you get from being this child who's loved, but pain. Father's a workaholic?
Pain. Suffering.
You.
Me, yeah.
You suffered.
Yeah. As you haven't.
I suffer daily.
Okay.
Yeah. Bowly. And psychologically, Rob, you suffer?
Yeah.
You do.
Come on, Rob. How do you,
what do you suffer
how
with?
Do you, yeah, how do you suffer?
This is the
you
first time like you've opened up. Yeah. He's opening up for the first time. What do you suffer from?
I would call myself a workaholic. I work a lot and try to keep myself busy so that my mind is busy.
So you suffered. I hate to say this, but I want to hear about your suffering because somehow it helps people, me included, understand that you don't just have it together. You work to have it together.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
To get it together.
1,000%. I mean, I'm happy to talk about whatever you want to talk about, but the idea that we have to work, we have to train and condition our body, craft, and mind, and getting that alignment between our thoughts, words, and actions, that's what it's about. But alignment for whom? For you. Not for me. Not for mom. Not for dad. Not for, you know, it's not those.
Can't do it for other people.
No.
Do it for yourself.
Yeah, but they have programmed us. Before we could barely speak, they were programming, right? And so that early software programming was influenced first by our parents. And you might have had world-class parents.
Think I did?
The way you described it. Yeah. But there's an asterisk next
to
it.
My dad was a workaholic too.
Yeah. So they were probably trying to do their very best. Most people I know are trying to do their very best and ill-equipped in some ways and over-equipped in other ways. And I don't know anyone that says, you know what? I'm just a bad human. And it's my fault that the world, that people are suck in the world or, you know, or
I've thought of myself sometimes negatively, like, I'm just not a great person. And then I go, yeah, you are. You do all this stuff. But sometimes it's just like those negative thoughts because something happens or this, or you didn't do something right, or you acted a certain way and you're like, you feel bad. It's ephemeral. It doesn't, you know, last long, Rob. That's what ephemeral means, short-lived. Now, you diverted.
No, I don't want to.
You deflected, though. You went away.
I'm trying to be useful here. My pain, I'm not sure is useful.
I think it is.
Okay, I'm happy to explore that with you.
Really? Believe it or not, I'm walking on air. Do you remember that song?
I do, yeah.
That was a great show, The Greatest American Hero.
Squirrel?
Squirrel, that's exciting. I have ADD. This is sort of, I'm successful in a lot of ways because of that. My mind works with all these things. I'm thinking of things and songs and I'm going to write something crazy and I'm going to sell a TV show. And thank God for that. So I don't want to lose that. I just want to sort of kind of be present and learn how to do that. So by doing that, I look at someone like you and you're extremely successful. And by the way, very handsome. I'm not gay.
Oh, thank you.
But you're very handsome. Well, you're my age.
That's awkward too.
Maybe a little. Is it awkward? You got to be comfortable with your sexuality in this world. Sully? It's very thumbs up. So look, I like to hear this stuff because what it does for me, if I see successful people that talk about their suffering and their anxiety or things that happen to them, it makes me relate to them and it makes me feel better about myself and I think it helps people.
Right. Yeah, I think you're on the money. There's a good science that misery loves company, yep. But it's actually miserable people like miserable company. So like there's a trap to fall into, which we just talk about the pain and the shit and the ugliness and the suffering. And okay, now we're bonded over what, you know, like that we're suffering. So here it is for me is that there was an emptiness, a void in the pit of my stomach growing up and looking back, right? And which is easier to do. And I remember one day saying to my mom, like, she goes, Mike, are you happy? And I said, I don't know. I feel like seventh grade. I feel like there's an emptiness inside me. What seventh grader is saying, like, there's an emptiness. So that would lead to some to think that there was some depression brewing, right? Something. But there was an anxiousness built with that. And it was because my dad was ripping and running, doing his thing. And I was kind of the man of the house. And I got that message early, be the man of the house. At six, what do you mean? You know, at eight, what? I'm not ready.
I'm still
for
not
that.
The man of the house at yeah. 45. Out of the house.
So, okay, so that happened.
Right.
And there's no anger about this, but that was part of the conditions. And then the game to look good rather than be good was real for me. And there's a name for that now called cognitive dissonance. And it's similar to what I was talking about before, cognitive meaning, you know, the mental processes, and dissonance meaning in a harsh sound or harsh tone. So cognitive dissonance is when we have cognitive dissonance, it's said to be one of the more painful experiences humans because we're not lined up. It's not working right. And so for me, I was more concerned at a young age about what people were thinking of me than actually being me. And I bet you can relate to that. No?
Dude. You just nailed it on the fucking head. Yeah, I mean, come on. I mean, this is what I got. This is what I just want to get over. I just want to, like, you know, I've thought about, honestly, there's points in my life where I have thought of, like, saying, fuck this business. I'm moving back to Indiana. I'm just going to buy
but
a farm.
Got a gift,
I don't want.
Right. Yeah. But you got a gift. So now that's playing it safe and small and, like, reverting down to a lower version of you. You got a gift. You got a creative way that you right. organize thoughts. You've got a frantic fun energy about you. Like, how do you harness and use that so that whatever your mission in life is amplified? That's the work.
And it's focus. And it's like, and it's not being too all over the place. It's kind of zoning in on, like, hey, focus on this instead of all these things, which the ADD is like, okay, what do I do? What do I do?
So that happened for me at a young age. And then it all magnified through my first sport that I really loved was surfing. And there's two types of surfing. There's free surfing and there's competitive surfing.
And there's the web.
Mm. See?
Well, I mean, I'm just... Well, I mean, there's three kinds of surfing.
I was so serious. I'm bearing my soul.
No. Come on. I'm just adding a little humor.
Yeah, no. And so, so there's three types of surfing.
Yes,
one was not invented at the time of the story.
That's true. It was not invented.
Yeah. So, all right. So I am trying to sort out, as a free surfer, it's good. I'm out with the boys. It's great. I'm looking for opportunities to push limits. Like, I grew up a bit off axis. I like that off axis view of the world.
Right.
And so, you know, as often as we can put ourselves in the pit of a wave or paddle into something that everyone was scared about, that's how you get, like, the knowing that you have what it takes. And you also get lots of praise. Okay. So I was drunk by the praise, drunk by trying to get approval from other people. I didn't know better. I'm a 15-year-old kid trying to sort it out. And so then, come time for competition, judges, the beach is semi-full. Like, not really. It's not what you imagine. It's like a 15-year-old kid contest, you know?
And it's not like Spicoli in Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Yeah. And that. So at that, on those moments, I was a shell of myself. I couldn't access my mind. So you know the term choking, right? So there's
choking.
There's,
yeah, like when you choke.
Choke,
you
just, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So there's choking, micro-choking, performing under pressure and thriving under pressure. That's a very accepted model. And there is a way to dissolve pressure. I'll get to that later if yes. we have time. But so I would choke. And so what that means, the
you
way
at the lowest level.
Yeah.
Choke is fifth.
Fifth. Like it's the bottoms. And what that really means though, is that my mind was choking off access to my body and craft. So it was, I was like a pinhole where my talent was trying to come through. Not possible, not effective, not awful. And it's just based on thought patterns, right? So every thought leads to a thought pattern and thought patterns lead to thought habits. And somewhere in there, we got to get good at recognizing the more optimal thoughts, you know? And it doesn't mean positive, like, hey, let's hold hands.
Right.
That's not what that means. Okay, so I didn't realize it. So I'm struggling out in the water. I can't feel my feet. I'm disconnected completely.
Anxiety.
I'm motherfucking myself out in the water. Yeah, it was full anxiety.
Right.
What am I worried about? What they were thinking of me.
What they were thinking. That's the biggest thing.
Yeah, they had nothing to do with my life. But I gave them all the free rent that you could imagine. And so they're in my head. They're like, but it's subtle. It's so subtle because it's not like I was sitting out back in the water saying, okay, if I don't get this wave, they're not going to love me. If I don't get this wave, they're going to laugh at me. It's way more subtle.
It's almost subconscious.
Fully, completely, because of the regular thought patterns I was having throughout the day, they just show up. But it's like a pattern of tension as soon as people start watching. And I'm telling you right now, I hope you can relate, but it's a broken experience. It's painful. It sucks.
It's the worst.
You train your ass off to be able to be fluid, to be free, to be on the edge. And there you have an opportunity and you become a shell of yourself.
You know, can I interject?
Yeah.
You're like, shocking.
Please.
No, I feel what that does, you're missing out on feeling how much you enjoy what you're doing. You know, how much you want to do it, how good you could be, your potential, and all that is being erased because you're worrying on something that you can't control.
Yeah, if we think about that, harmony. Like, if there's some sort of harmony about what you're talking about, where there's an alignment, where there's a fluidness, where there's a joy, where there's the ability to really express, it all becomes dampened by the anxious mind, the worried mind. And so I had zero tools. There was a competitor. He was a grown man in our heat. There's only three guys out. It's like 6-foot surf. It's beautiful, glassy out in the ocean. Exactly the images that we would hope to be able to surf in those conditions. And he paddles by me.
Let's go meditate. No, just kidding.
And he paddles by and he says, Gervais, you got to stop worrying about what could go wrong. And I thought, oh my God, like, how does he know? Like a good competitor, he didn't tell me what to do. He just dropped that little gem in there and paddled off, and he won the heat. So, you know, right. But looking back, there was a light bulb moment for me. And that light bulb moment was, oh my God, like, yeah, I can actually choose thoughts to help me. I had no idea that there was a field of sports psychology, of psychology, period. I had no idea. And so there's this thing called the DSM, Diagnostical Statistical
Manual. I know DSL.
DSL?
I'm not going to repeat.
This is more intense than that.
Yeah, this is more
intense. Actually, the DSL is life-changing. DSM is just this big book of the diagnostic criteria for craziness, you know, for schizophrenia, this, that, and the other, depression, anxiety. And so I keep in my DSM, okay, all the disorders, all the characteristics of disorders, my high school report card, because I took psychology as either junior or senior. I should go back and look. You know what I got?
A C.
F.
Did you get an F in psychology?
I didn't understand it. I had no idea. I think it was a junior year. I had no idea what these guys were talking about. And so I was in a different world. Then I had these painful experiences. And then I had some mentors. And these mentors wrapped their arms around me. And they're like, come here, kid. You know, let me show you the world of the invisible. And so it was a theologian, a psychologist, and a philosopher. And
how old are you?
Okay, so the longer part of the story is my mom got – I was at the – senior year, and I got a 0 on my SAT. I went surfing. So I had no hope to go to school, right? SAT, the college.
I was like, wow.
Yeah, 0.
You didn't get one right.
Strong, I know.
What happened?
Yeah, I know. Put your name down. You get like 200 points or something. Yeah. So I skipped it. And I didn't care. I didn't care. I was more interested in other things. So at the end of the year, my parents were like, we tried. They didn't go to school. They didn't know the path. Loving parents, but they didn't know what to do. And they said, we tried. And so you either have to get a job and get out, or you go to community college. I said, I'm not going to community college. That's for losers. like I had any options. And they said, okay, there was a school right up the road called Marymount College. It's a junior college, private junior college. And I knew that there was a world-class surf break right next to it. So I was like, perfect. I know how to go to school, fake school. And go, right?
Yeah.
Perfect. I'll do that for 2 years. And then I'll be damned. I tested into remedial math and remedial English.
Sounds familiar.
Sounds awful, doesn't it? But you know, I wanted to give it a go. And then these three professors, best friends, Dr. Kuzio, Zanka, and Perkins, and they showed me the world and the invisible. No one ever had to ask me to read a book again. It's like, boom, it caught on fire for me. I read as much as I could get my arms around the original thinkers of psychology, the deep theories that were being challenged at the time, what they were. No one in my family went to school. Then I finished a bachelor's degree, started my master's degree. Where do I go? I keep going to psychology. But it was Pepperdine. But it was the study of the broken. It was traditional psychology, and I dropped out. My parents were like, damn, we thought we had one.
but at this point, you know, from the guy Spicoli saying, hey, dude, stop thinking about things. Stop thinking about what other people think. You know, that's why you're losing, and he swims off and he wins the heat. And then, you know, at what point did you stop thinking about what other people thought?
It was a slow drip because I started to become more interested in the science of it. And then, I'll tell you this story. I was waking up, it was like second or third semester in junior college, and I'm just trying to keep it all together. I've got a girlfriend at the time, now my wife. I'm waking up in the morning with such anxiety that by the time I was brushing my teeth, my hands were shaking.
Dude, Jesus.
That was awful.
Yeah, I get lightheaded sometimes.
Yeah,
you get lightheaded. You get the numbness.
Ungrounded.
It's just ungrounded. You feel disconnected. You feel tired. You feel all these things.
Just so many thoughts, but there's only one place to be.
What the fuck?
Yeah, all
you're
I
brushing
need to
your
do.
Fucking teeth.
Just brush my teeth. Just brush my teeth.
Maybe floss.
Yeah, that's good too. So that's where it started. And I was sick and tired of feeling sick and tired, literally. And so I didn't have traditional crutches, you know, to go to. I wasn't going to do alcohol and drugs just because I grew up in it. And I wasn't going to do that. So it was work. It's workaholic for me for sure. But I didn't know what to do. So it was just anxiety, period. And I'll tell you where that's come full circle. I think that this insight is a game changer for me, is that the model that we, not just me, but we need to do more to be more. We need to do extraordinary things to be extraordinary. It's caused great fatigue in our current culture, and it's broken. So we need to flip it on its head. We need to be more and let the doing flow from there. We need to be more grounded, be more present, be more authentic, be more expressive, be more thoughtful, and let the doing flow from there. And that, I think, is one of the ways to unlock people's potential.
And you slowly learn this and came up with it, not came up with it, but for me, it would be taking, like, you know, tons of different theories on acting and going, I like that what Stanislavski said. And you take what Strasberg said, and you go, I like what he said, but not all of it. And you kind of combine it to, like, what works for you. Is that what you sort of did?
Well, I want to be thoughtful how I answer that, because I get to stand on the giants of great science and scientists. And I'm not working to hijack that science because I respect it. I need to make it work for me, though. And I'm in different ecosystems than they were. So many of them were in laboratories, and I'm in alpha competitive, rugged, and hostile environments with the most alpha competitors in the world. So I want to be thoughtful how I answer that.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I'll tell you why. When Dr. Zenka, one of those early mentors, we were studying world religions, and he says, So I go, oh my God, Buddha says this, this, and this. That's amazing. And Jesus said this, this, and Confucius said this, this, and this. And Muhammad is cracking about that. And then, why don't we just take all these ideas together? Like, this is amazing. Like, drop some of the weird stuff. And like, this is, and he says, and he just looks at me, this in front of the whole class, and he says, Gervais, you think that you know better than Jesus, Buddha, Muhammad, and Confucius all put together? It's like, no, but, and he says, okay, well, why don't you write your own book? Start with one idea. Come on, kid.
It's amazing.
Yeah. So I'm
the world would be better, wouldn't it, if you just joined all those things, all those thoughts? Hey, Jesus was right, Muhammad was right, the whole world, there'd be peace, world peace.
They say,
hey, we're all right. We're all right, which makes us all right. You know what I'm saying?
They're more similar than dissimilar. It's crazy how we've had more heads lopped off in the name of religion than
we can get into that. We could certainly get into that. We don't have to get into that, but we could get into that. I mean, it's an amazing.
Have you read Viktor Frankl's book?
No.
Oh, dude. Jewish, right?
Yeah.
You got to read Viktor Frankl's book.
Really?
Man's Search for Meaning. Read the first like 120 pages.
Write that down, like that. Rob. Wait, we're recording it. I could just listen to it.
Mm-hmm.
Never mind. So suddenly you're, I don't know how, in your 20s now, you're thinking right. By this point, you've got your shit together, would you say?
No, but I'm starting to understand the psychology of the science of it.
Are you still surfing competitively at all?
That sounds like I was good. No,
right.
I was surfing a lot, but not competitively.
But I think it's impossible to not ever care what people think.
There is a freedom that comes on the other side of loving other people and then not giving really a shit what they think of you. Like, you can decouple that. You can love them deeply and not be beholden by what they think of you.
And you really feel like that's who you are.
Like we just met. I don't care what you think of me. My job is to be me.
I care what you think of me.
Yeah, I know. You're going to be trapped by it.
Yeah,
but I can still have love for you. I love the exchange that we're having.
Yeah.
I love that your ideas are percolating and that we're trying to figure out how to meet in the middle.
Yeah.
Like, why would you care what I think of you? I'm going to leave.
Yeah, but, this. You know, part of me wants you to be like, hey, Sully, that dude is kind of fun. He's cool. I don't want you to be like, God, man, he's fucked.
He has
no chance. So and then I'd be like, I wonder if he's thinking that. And if he thinks that, then I really am fucked.
That's where it goes, right? I know that game. I know it really well.
I know. You're right. You're right. I should be like, hey, you know what? I'm me. I can't change me. I'm trying to be nice and fun and whatever. And then he'll think whatever. And it shouldn't even occur to me. I shouldn't even care.
You can change. And it does not matter, really. But like, if you spend as much time, this is me speaking. Let me speak to myself first. If I spend as much time paying attention to how I want to think and be and feel, as opposed to what I want people to think and feel about me, it was a massive change for me. Massive change. So that's the lonely work, though. That's what we were talking about earlier. We have to do the lonely work. Pen and paper is one of the great ways to do it. Inspire deep, rich conversations. And then write, meditating or using mindfulness. Those are the three ways, I think, to get really to the center of stuff.
Deep, rich conversations.
Yeah.
Like what we're having?
I don't know if this is, because I think about...
Jesus, now you're judging me.
Yeah, no. I'm judging the quality of our conversation. Right. Yes, and. I mean, there's a layer that lacks intimacy in this conversation, but there's fun.
We can hold hands if you want.
We could do that.
Sure.
But like this conversation... is different than if, let's say, the microphones were not on and the questions are, and maybe you don't care about the filters of the microphone, doesn't matter, and we're really talking about you and where you need to go to be great.
Yeah.
And the pains and suffering that you feel and how to, move through that. There's a different tone to it.
You're right. I'd probably cry.
Yeah. Me too.
Rob, you'd cry too.
When was the last time you cried?
I told my psychiatrist this. I go, there's got to be something wrong with me, because I will cry. I was watching The Price is Right, and I don't know, this woman who just didn't seem like she had her shit together or was broke and whatever, and she won. It was just like she won a lot of money and she was so happy. And I don't know, I wouldn't tell most people this, but I'm telling you this on my podcast. But I teared up a little bit. And I thought, there's something wrong with you because you're crying at The Price is Right.
Nah,
that's what I thought.
So I ask that question a lot to alpha competitors. When's the last time you felt so much you let go? And you'd be surprised. They are not reptiles.
They cry?
Yeah, you'd be surprised. They let it go. They live right on the edge. I mean, they're full of passion.
Do you think that's why they're, you hear a lot of times like football players or athletes, they have to be so focused and so on edge and so like ready to go that they come off as sometimes, nasty or assholes or whatever. It's because it's not personal. It's like they can't do that. They can't get too soft because they got to focus on being great.
Well, there's a lot of different ways than personality types on, for football players or any sport in that matter. So there is a required intensity to do well in that rugged environment. So there's no one way.
Have you dealt with like, okay, I got to help this person and they're not pleasant to be around?
Yeah.
Do you have to get a call?
No.
You sure?
Turning off my phone.
Oh, you were? Oh, I thought you had it. Because look, you're like, you're an important person. Like, listen,
The most important person right now is you.
But listen to me. I would completely understand if you go, hey, I got to help this guy. This athlete's about to kick a field goal. And I need to fucking help him out. I need to get this call.
That's not how it works for me.
That's not how it works?
No.
I mean, he's got the Finkel in him. It's like dumb. Laces out, Finkel. Yeah. It's Ace Ventura. Do you deal with guys like that?
I deal with lots of different types. There are people that I learn more from, and there's people that definitely do a lot of the learning as well. So you'd be surprised. Like on the world stage, it is not what you imagine.
I know you only deal with athletes, it seems like.
No.
Well, I mean,
go back to musicians.
Because you said
entertainers.
Have you ever dealt with an actor before?
Yeah.
One-on-one?
Oh, yeah.
Really? Would you do it again? I have some money. I will pay you.
I'll tell you how
much. I hope I get a discount because I think people are going to really love this podcast. But like, I personally think you could help me because I'm a little crazy.
Yeah.
I'm a little out there. Mm-hmm. And I know you don't give advice, but I'm willing to do the work here. I'm doing the little things. I am trying every day to be a better person, to not give a shit.
The first part of your work then is to figure out like, what is your personal philosophy? What are the guiding principles for your life? And if you could get it out in 25 words or less, that's a significant piece of work to do for yourself. And then if you could get it down to 4, 3, 2, 1 word, like think about it though. Let's go back to the big spiritual leaders. What did Jesus stand for? What? Love.
Love.
I mean, he had phrases around it. Do unto others as you.
I see what you're saying.
So like, right. So but he came in and said, okay, listen, it's about love. What did Gandhi stand for? What did Martin Luther King Jr. stand for? What did Mother Teresa stand for? What did, you know, think about these big
love,
shapers.
Peace.
Yeah, pretty much.
Happiness.
Equality.
Equality, yeah.
You know, okay, so that doesn't mean it has to be yours or mine, but what are they, how do we know theirs? They were so clear. Every room they came in, every conversation they had was about that. And so when you get that alignment, those are easy models. You can also look at the great political leaders and shapers of the world. And even like Elon Musk, you know, like great entrepreneurs and CEOs, is that they're really clear about what they stand for. They're really clear about the vision they have for the future and the mission that they're on right now. You get those three things right, vision, mission, and philosophy. I think it's a significant step.
Could you help Donald Trump?
If Donald Trump wants to do some work, that'd be...
He'd call you and say, Michael, I need some help.
Jesus,
can you imagine? The next day you're fired.
Yeah, can you imagine?
Happen.
Yeah.
That would be something. This is incredible because you talk about, you know, you go to school, you get your degree, you're starting to fall in love with this, you have these theories, and the next thing you know, you're working with the Seattle Seahawks, you're working with Baumgartner. What's his name?
Felix Baumgartner.
Felix Baumgartner, who the highest jump in history, 28,000.
130,000 feet.
I was 100,000 off. But you know about this, Rob?
Yeah, you tell me about this.
Yeah.
Rob, where were you when he jumped?
I don't.
You didn't watch it on TV?
It crashed YouTube.
50 million people.
Oh, it was when he jumped from the sky?
When he jumped from the sky.
Yeah. Red Bull.
Yeah, I don't know. I was in Chicago.
Do you remember it?
Yeah, I remember it.
Yeah, it crashed. It like literally took down. It was unbelievable. I'm so fortunate to be part of that project.
How did this happen? I mean, first of all, how do they pick a guy who has doubts? I mean, first of all, they're like, all right, this is the guy that's going to do it. He's going to jump the highest. He's like, but he has doubts. I don't know if we're going to go through with it.
No, that's great. This was a long process. You know, it was.
How many years?
Multiple years. I think it was somewhere around 6, maybe 8. You know, I don't know the exact math on it, but I came in about halfway through. And this is an important lesson like to think about, because these were some of the most advanced thinkers in aerospace. And this was a real project. This wasn't a stunt. This was trying to sort out what happens if we're going to Mars. What happens at 130,000 feet if we press eject? Will our arms and limbs rip apart if we hit the speed of sound, Mach 1? Will our head and torso be traveling at that speed? And would our arms and limbs rip off? And so it's a real investigation, amongst other things. That was just one of the curious questions. And halfway through, they had built the great technology. They had all of the equipment was right on. They had strategies that were wonderful. So the craft was right, and the body and equipment and all that stuff was really on point. But they missed what I would consider, from my vantage point, the most important skill, which is to think clearly under duress. And so he is the strong man. And so people like him are changing the world, not because of what he did alone. Because if you didn't know that he struggled, and if you didn't know that he had real fear, you'd say he's crazy, and he's not. You'd say that he's born that way, and he's not.
Yeah.
He's just like us. He had to work. He had a vision. He had an idea. He didn't know if he could do it. Nobody knows if they could do it. Even the brightest minds in aerospace didn't know if they could do it. So when you push to the edge, to our earlier thought, by definition, you don't know if you have the capabilities and capacities to do the thing. You don't know if you can think or move fast enough or eloquent enough to survive. And that's what pressure feels like, right? On stage. I don't know if I can think fast enough or move fast enough to survive.
Or remember what I'm going to say, or remember what I'm going to do, or how I do it. What's the next step? It's like, I'm programmed to do this. I've rehearsed this. I should know it. I can't mess up. You know, it's thinking clearly, thinking logically, thinking straight. It's right.
Yeah. And there's part of you also that loves the improv nature and the spike of adrenaline that comes from not knowing.
Except right. You probably wouldn't improvise when you're 130,000 feet up.
Exactly right.
You know what? Maybe I'll start with a joke. Hey, everybody, I'm Rodney Dangerfield here. All right. I'm going to press this button. I'm going to jump 130,000 feet up, I tell you. All right, here we go.
Classic. No. So he is the strong man in the arena, and he puts up his hand and says, I need help. You know, I can't keep doing it.
That took balls just to say that, because he's like, they're going to think I'm weak. They're going to think of this. They're going to use someone else, or they're going to cancel the whole thing, blah, blah. And by the way, do you sign confidentiality agreements?
With everyone.
Mm-hmm. Right, because I have one with my assistant. Like, you know, it's like, hey, if I talk about, you know, I don't have hemorrhoids, but if I did, you know, you can't tell people I have hemorrhoids. So I think things are probably a little more, what's the matter? Rob?
This is my analogy.
It's the go-to, huh?
I don't have hemorrhoids, just to make it clear. I'm perfectly smooth down there.
They're gone?
No, they're not gone. I never had them. I might have had pushed too hard, and it was like a little bubble. I don't think it was a hemorrhoid, though. So I think we all have that. Are you enjoying this?
Where have we gone?
I listened to a podcast that, you know, you interviewed this guy. I listened to it. It was with the guy who had a, on the news, he was speaking and he kind of.
Oh, yeah. Dan Harris.
Dan Harris. He's great. He's a commentator and all this. And, you know, I listened to you guys for a while and it was very, you know, intelligent, very focused, very, you know, and I find it fun. It was fun. It was a really good podcast. Your podcast is great. It's called The Master.
Come on.
The Mastery.
Finding Mastery. That's good. It's a good attempt. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Finding Mastery. And I listened to it and I was like, it's great. I'm like, huh, man, he's really a smart, serious guy. I don't know if he's going to like me. I said, maybe that's why I got anxiety, because I'm like, maybe he's going to come on. I just figured it out. I'm worried about, like, he's such a serious guy. I'm not. I'm serious, but I use it in a different way because it's kind of layman's terms. I want my listeners to understand things. I want me to understand things. Rob, a few minutes ago before you came, he said, I think it's ignorance that makes people really like you. And I said, thank you. It just seems like you're naive in a way, but you could ask anything and it doesn't feel like invasive. Do you feel that way, Michael?
I do not feel that you're invasive.
Okay. I think that's good.
No, I think what you just had is like an aha moment, right? Like, oh my God, I think I just figured something out.
Yeah.
You know, right. And was I worried about what he was thinking of me? Who cares? Who cares what I think? Like, really?
I'm not going to change my podcast and go, well, I'm going to wear a suit
right,
and tie.
Exactly. Right.
We're going to go to some studio and I'm like, so your theory in college, your thesis, you
right,
wrote
exactly.
Michael Gervais all the way. And what I gathered from that was that you were a real... Right? So I can't do that.
Were you just mocking me? Is that what that was?
No.
Yes.
No, but I wasn't mocking you. I find you incredibly...
A little bit.
I find you incredibly engaging, incredibly bright, incredibly comforting. I don't have a fear at all anymore.
Look at
that. I think you've cured me.
Look at that.
But the confidentiality agreement. So you can't tell me that this guy, Baumgartner, he said, okay, you ready for this? And I'm sure... As someone who works with, you never know what to expect. What is it going to be this time? You're sure that it's one thing. It's going to be, there's anything you could handle. There's nothing that someone's going to say that you're not going to handle.
I'm not as surprised as I once was. There's still some surprising things that come up.
Like, what's the weirdest thing someone said? And you could change something to
me. Sure. Yeah. And so let me finish that thought on confidentiality
first.
Is that, yes. So he has made it public. So the athlete or performer or executive or client, if you will, once they make it public, then it is public.
But that
doesn't mean that I can talk anything about what we did. So the fact that we did work together, that's public. He made it public. And so that's the end of that story, right? Like,
what?
That's it. That's
I thought it's public so I could read about it.
Yeah, you can read it. Like, he's talked a lot about it. And there's a documentary that's coming out on it. And so
anyone ever said, Michael, like the weirdest thing, for instance, my uncle's a psychologist. He had one person come in. This is a true story. I'm not trying to be funny, but he walked in and they had talked to each other. You're waiting for something. And he's like, what's your issue? He goes, I won't go outside. Usually you're an agoraphobic. He's like, no. Well, I guess so. But I fear that I'm going to shit my pants in public. That was honest to God. He thought he had a fear that he was going to shit his pants.
That's a tough way to go, isn't it?
Could you handle something like that?
Yeah, I mean, we'd have to make light of it first.
Have you had any... Have you ever met somebody that's just like, I feel like when I'm about to kick this football, my pants are going to fall down in front of 50,000 people and all the NFL, and they're going to, you know...
God,
or I have a book.
I have not had that one.
I have not had that one. I always feel like I'm not handsome enough. I look old on camera. What have you had? What are some things that you could talk
about? Here's an interesting one that I thought was... It's relevant. It's timely. Is that world-class doer comes in and says, I'm keeping out of the conversation. He says, you know, I met a barista. Good. And he says, I'm going to introduce her to my wife and my two kids. What do you mean? Yeah, I think that I'm going to change the rules of the relationship now and I'm bringing her home. This is just recently. So, so now the barista is living in the guest bedroom with the two kids. And this, you know, just kind of shifted to an open relationship.
How does that even start? It sounded like he didn't need advice. He knew what he was doing.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's just part of the storyline.
Just part of the storyline?
Part of the storyline.
Now, you know, I worked with, or I'm friends with John Ryan. That's yes. how we got to, you know, John, I think John sent you an email.
What's up, John?
And John loves you. He's the punter for the Seattle Seahawks.
And legend. His career is legendary.
He's a legend. Yeah. And he's the nicest guy in the world. And he's like, this guy just comes in. What is it you do? Is you have a sort of when you first approach a team, you come in, they're like, Pete Carroll's like, he always chews gum weird. You notice his mouth's always chomping? Non sequitur. But, you know, he walks in and he says, guys, this is Michael Gervais. You're all fucked. He's going to help you.
That was actually my first. That's classic. That was my first entree into sport, pro sport. It was in hockey.
And hockey?
So, yeah.
Well, that was football, but hockey was.
Yeah, hockey was my first. It's been all the traditional stick and ball sports I've been part of, action adventure sports as well. Been fortunate to work in the Olympics and on fighter pilot on the USS Truman. You know, with fighter pilots and heads of departments, it was awesome. But anyway, so I've been around into many different environments. Hockey was the first one. And I think you'll appreciate this. You like sure. hockey. You know hockey.
You saw my room hockey. Full of hockey yeah. jerseys. Yeah, I'm a big – yeah, Sully's a friend of – mutual friends of Sheldon Surrey. Great hockey player. He retired. But yeah, but go ahead about hockey.
In my first gig, and I meet the GM.
How old are you?
Oh, gosh, what is this? This was probably 90 – four, somewhere in that range.
So you're 20.
Yeah. I was born in 71. So this I was like 25, 24, 25. Young.
You're young. Young. And this is your first professional. I mean, you got to be nervous at this.
No. So.
Oh yeah. You don't get nervous.
I did that already.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I've been nervous enough. I've worn out that wick. So here's how it goes. So the medical director, the head doc for the team comes in. And we have some exchanges. I've got an extrusion in my back. So there's a herniation and an extrusion. So it was a surfing accident and one disc popped out, one disc popped in. And the one that popped in was floating around my spinal cord. I mean, can you imagine like what it was like to be a 20-some-year-old with
brutal. I've had five major back surgeries.
There you go.
I get it. I know it.
Okay. So we have switched on to a really good conversation. He's like, you know what? This team could really benefit. Like, I think the coach could, like, this could be great. He goes, have you ever worked in hockey? I said, no. Did you ever play hockey? No. Okay. But, you know, I still think that this could work. So he introduces me to the general manager. Great conversations. The three of us, great conversation. And the GM says, this is it. This is going to be amazing. This is really going to help us. We're right on the edge of doing some great things in this team. So deal done.
Deal and done. You signed a contract. Yeah. You're going to make a lot of money to help this team.
No, it wasn't a lot of money at that
50,
time.
$50,000.
Yeah. Carry some bags. Okay. You know. Okay. So I was like, so I'm young. I'm wet behind the ears. I barely know. I just started my master's degree or I just finished my master's and hadn't finished, even started, I think, my PhD. I don't know anything. I really don't. But I had figured some stuff out about how I worked, right? But I didn't know the body of knowledge yet. So I come in and he says, meet us at practice Tuesday, whatever clock. Right after practice, we'll introduce it to the coach. I mean, think about what I did. I signed a contract without even meeting the coach.
Oh,
what
boy.
Am I doing?
Yeah.
What am I doing?
You could get your ass kicked.
Oh my God. So looking back, it's unbelievable what I did. So I'm there as, I don't know, I probably weigh 180 pounds. And so I walk in and I'm on the side of the ice and I'm a surfer. Yeah. Okay. I didn't have a jacket on. So can you imagine this picture?
Catching a cold, snot running down your nose.
So coach looks over and he gives me a nod. And then he brings all the boys in. They whistle. He blows a whistle. And then come to learn, he bags them. Extra 15 minutes on the ice, skating blue line, red line, just bags them. So they're exhausted. We go into the locker room and I'm pretty excited now. Like this is like, oh my gosh, this is okay. We're starting.
You're excited and you're not nervous at all, really.
Well,
maybe a little because it's new. It's new. It's different. You know,
I was cold.
Right. You're cold.
Don't look down there.
Your back hurts.
Yeah, no, it didn't at that point. Okay, I was getting there. So there's a lot of, there's a buzz in me for sure. And he says, Gervais, let's go to my office and talk. And as we're walking through the locker room, so there's like a hallway that you go through, right? And then there's that rubber carpet that everyone's all, and they all look like they're 15.
Yeah, they're an extra 4 inches on skates. Yeah.
And as we're walking through the locker room, he says to the guys, he says, hey guys, stay in your gear. We'll be right back out. And so we go into his office. He closed the door. It's about a 5-minute conversation, maybe 7 minutes, somewhere in there. And he's just nodding his head. So he's asking questions and he's nodding. I'm answering. He's nodding his head. I'm like, oh, this is easy. This is a nice little conversation. So he goes, okay, ready to meet the boys? I said, sure. And so we go out and we walk to the center of the room and he says, all right, boys. So this is Gervais. If you're fucked up in the head, go see him. And he walks off. And so at that moment I was like, oh, okay.
Did you have to correct him?
No. Well, so this is going to sound like I'm a tough guy and I'm not by any means, but I didn't come from money. I don't need your money. I don't need hockey. I don't need pro anything. I didn't care about working with pros. I just want to work with people that want to figure out how the shit works.
Yeah.
So he's about four steps away to his office. And I said, hey, coach, my door's open for you. And I was like, you know, I got a degree in street psychology, I think, before sports psychology. And so the room erupts. The boys are throwing the Gatorade cans around. Like the room erupts. They're howling and hooting. And from that moment, it was like, all right, what's this kid got to say? You know, so it,
wow.
Yeah. So that was my entry in there. And so I got punked. And so I met the punk, you're right. Like I met it in a good way. Like I feel like I'm bragging in that story, but that was the actual story. And I feel really good about it too. Like there's been plenty of times when I've like, fuck, I wish I would have said something and I didn't, but this one I did.
Do you ever feel like even today, like a failure at something?
Imposter syndrome. Professors at Stanford, when they're asked to come into Stanford to be a new professor, they are asked to take a course called imposter syndrome. Because when they've done something to get asked to be a professor at Stanford and they walk down the halls and they see, you know, Nobel Peace Prize winner, you know, oh my God, that's the legend I've been reading about for 20 years. And so there's littered with real intelligence. So they ask people to take the course on imposter syndrome, recognizing that it's a real deal. The fear that one day you'll be found out that you don't know what they think you know. Like that's a real deal. And so when you ask that question, that's where I go. You know, like, and I've wrestled with it big time. And even as we're talking, you know, like I know some stuff and I know that I don't know very much. I'm still a beginner.
I honestly remember I was doing a show and they cast me. And I remember right after I got cast, I go, well, now I'm going to film the pilot and they're going to fire me because they're going to realize I'm not that good, or I'm not good looking enough, or I'm not. And I had that fear and I had that fear. And then I remember asking the director when he's like, hey, you want to look at, you know, some of the stuff, you know, we did ADR, which is your voice when you go in dub stuff. I'm sure you've done that. Maybe not. But I went in there and I looked at it and I go, is there a chance they're going to fire me or anything? He's like, I want you to watch something. And I watched it and I go, ooh, I'm really good. Yeah, they're not going to fire me. I'm really good. I remember saying it out loud and everybody laughed. But, you know, I think that's a human nature. There's nobody out there that doesn't think, you know, hey, you know, when the Seahawks against the New England Patriots a couple of years ago, when they threw that ball and it was intercepted on the 1 yard line, when they had the game.
What game are you talking about?
You asshole. He got me.
Yeah, that was a good look.
But they probably thought like they were failures for a second. They forgot about the Super Bowl they won the year before and they thought like they were failures. There's probably that moment. That's just a human moment, right?
You know what's amazing about our brain, go back to that for a minute, is there's no redundancies. So it's beautifully complicated, but the same centers or regions of the brain that are responsible for grief, like loss of a loved one, are amplified during loss of a game. It's amazing. So literally, walking into the locker room after that game, I've never felt the intensity of emotion, less one other time that I'll compare it to, that was on full tilt, and it was all emotions that were painful.
Sure.
And so 6'8" is crying. 6'7" is ripping his locker apart. 6'4" over there is undoing his wraps, screaming at the top of his lungs, why? There was the gentleman next to me, just like he was an older gentleman, so I won't tell you who he was, but he was just like sobbing. It was all of the tense emotions that you could imagine: anger, hurt, scared, you know, searching, yearning. And it was amazing. And it was on point.
Do you think I would have got my ass kicked if I walked in and said, you won it last year? Who cares?
Something would have happened.
I would have got my ass kicked. Now, did you know? I'm not saying a fucking word right now. I don't need to say anything. I'm there if they need me, but I'm not saying anything.
That's not my place. Yeah.
So you seem like one of those guys who's like, hey, I'll help you if you need help. If you want to come to me, I'm there, but I'm not going to come to you.
Yeah. I mean, this is Coach Carroll's. It begins and ends with Coach Carroll. And so he shapes a culture. He shapes, you know, he's got a concept that he calls long body, a beautiful concept, born out of Native American thinking, which is we are all connected. One mind, one body. It's a long body. And so we're all in it together. And so not until every one of us heals does this organization, does this one body heal, this long body. So yeah, he is, I don't know if you had the chance to meet him, but his vision about how things can work and could work is extraordinary. And his ability to amplify the culture to help people become great is like nothing I've been around before. I was done with pro sport and then we met. I didn't want to do it anymore. I mean, the narcissistic blowing up of microphones just for the self-absorbed conversations about how great a person is, like, just felt sloppy. And it was just overwhelming to me. So I was done with pro sports at that point. Then we had dinner. A mutual friend put us together and I was like, this is a beautiful human. Like,
yeah.
Like, wow. And so I was up at his organization. I was up at the Seahawks and for sure it was different.
You founded the Pinnacle Performance Center.
Yeah. So he and I actually, so that was long ago. So Pinnacle Performance is the boutique concierge, bespoke sports psychology, performance psychology services down in Los Angeles. And so that's been around for a while. And that's, you know, just one or two clients a month is what I see there doing that. And then he and I founded a company together, Coach Carol and I, called Compete to Create. So his philosophy, go back to philosophies, his is always compete to be the best dad, to be the best coach, friend, father. And then my philosophy is every day is an opportunity to create a living masterpiece. And so we put those two words together and we basically on the back of a napkin, it started, we took his ideas and my ideas that we've been doing together at the Seahawks. We wrote them down. We shared them with the CEO of Microsoft and we formalized it. We incubated it. We worked with, and so it's how to train the mind is really what this is about. He's got an advanced degree in training the mind as well, in psychology. And so we wrote down everything that we've been doing together on how to train the mind and amplify the culture. And so we started with 12 people at Microsoft. It turned into 24 to 2400. Jesus. We've now done 30,000 people, 8 hours a person on how to train their mind at Microsoft. That's 240,000 human hours of conditioning their mind. We have reached 1 in 5. So that was the idea, right? Can we impact 1 in 5 people at Microsoft to be more present? And God, talk about smart people. Jesus, like, really? Unbelievable. Oh, my God.
Do you help not smart people? So. Yes. What, could I do this? Could I say, hey, Michael, are you so busy or so whatever? Like, there's no, like, if I called you and I said, hey, you know, I'd love to do this. I'd love to do a program. You have the time to work with something like me?
No.
You don't?
No, but we could go to coffee. We could go get a tea.
So you don't have time?
Mm-mm.
Really?
Yeah, I'm doing like one, maybe two a month. And so that being said, you know, one slips out, one slips in, but so kinda, I should say. But the stuff that I'm, so the way that I've organized my professional life is I've got three working laboratories. One is Pinnacle, 2 clients a month. And then one is Compete to Create, which is taking the insights and the science and the art from world-class athletes and franchises into business. Right. And we got a scalable tech based business there that we're rolling out. And then the third is Finding Mastery. And so inside of Finding Mastery, I've got two components. One is the podcast.
Right.
Right? And then I'm every couple of years, I'm part of I'm either selected or I find a project that is right on the edge of like human potential. So right now I'm working with a gal named Leah Ditton, and this is public, so it's OK to talk about. And she's going to row solo row from Japan to San Francisco.
A what?
Solo row. Her and the boat and her oars and
how the hell does that happen?
No guide boat, just her in the ocean. It's somewhere between 4 and 6 months, depending on what currents she gets
somewhere
caught in.
Somewhere between insane and fucked is where it is.
So think about it.
That's crazy.
So the laboratory here for me is extreme aloneness. Like what happens to extreme? And the effort is extraordinary. 14 hours of rowing a day? For 4 months to 6 months.
Oh my God.
So anyone that wants to be part of that project, like she's right in the phase of securing funding and projects. Like there's maybe part of your listener base is like, yes, I want to be part of that. Like,
so where could they go? Or we don't know. They don't know yet.
Leah Ditton, Ditton. Okay. You can find her online.
So you're not going to help me.
Is that what we're doing?
Well, I think this has helped me and this is helping a lot of people. What are you shaking your head for, Rob? I'm just saying like, hey, if we got it.
He said he would have tea or coffee with you.
Right.
You
guys can talk. It sounds to me like he only does guys like are really big, like the Elon Musks. And like you're really busy. Somebody who's.
I've enjoyed this conversation.
Have you?
Yeah, a lot. You know, when I came in, I think you'll appreciate this. People that are funny can be really scary.
Really? Well, I was scared of you.
Yeah, and see how that works. And so I came in going, God, I wonder like how this is going to go. Because like sometimes humor can go quick, it can bite, and it's like, oh, what just happened?
Yeah, well, I wasn't disrespectful. I was just open.
No, it was beautiful. Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
you know, let me read this. But overall, you had a good time.
I have enjoyed.
Not that I give a shit.
See,
not that I give a shit.
See, we've already done some work now, haven't we?
You said something on Twitter that I really liked. Let me read it. Can you give me any dramatic music? Freedom happens from pushing the boundaries so far that playfulness is the experience, even in rugged environments.
Sounds so dramatic.
Okay, let me read it funnier.
Yeah.
Freedom happens from pushing the boundaries so far that playfulness is the experience. I like this quote.
Yeah, cool.
Came up with that.
Sure.
Yeah. Did it take you time? Did you like delete, go back? It wasn't like one train of thought. You took you probably a good hour to come up with that one.
I've come to appreciate like little gems that Twitter forces you to do. Like I've come to appreciate that. So
yeah.
No, but I think that's a pretty standard thought. I don't think that's
worded well.
Yeah. You know, like, but that isn't that what we're looking for? Like, can we play in the spaces that once were, you know, like really
perfect example. And we're almost done here. But when I, the most fun I have, and this is where I have to connect the mind and the body and the brain, and I have to work this out. But when I go play ice hockey on Monday or Sunday nights with you know, it's competitive, it's a blast. For an hour and a half, I sweat and I skate and I fucking love it. And I feel great and I don't think about anything and there's no stress and there's no nervous or anxiousness or, oh my God. And then that's gone. So why can't I recreate what happens there in my real life?
I love that thought because you've used sport as a forcing function, right? To be all in. And so that... You've used like one of the more ancient ways to be able to force yourself to be fully present, you know, which is fast paced, moving, rugged environments. Like think about the action sport athletes like Felix, like Alex Honnold. Do you know Alex Honnold? Do you know who that is?
No.
So he just climbed. I think he's one of the more significant minds in sport right now. He just free soloed El Capitan, 3,000 sheer granite, straight up, no ropes, no harnesses.
Oh my God.
Check him out. I think he's one of the more significant minds in sport based on what he's doing. And so that's a forcing function to be fully present. Zen Buddhists have been practicing being fully present in different ways. So if you're not practicing it, your brain's going to win. And your brain has ample theta brainwaves, right? Alpha, beta, theta, delta, and sometimes gamma.
Right.
So as we've been talking, do you want me to run through those? You've had gamma and theta. You know, it's been pretty cool. And you started off with beta. So beta is that high focused energy, like the gas pedals down and like high focus, but maybe anxious. And then alpha is this cruise control, just kind of mellow, you know, like good focus.
Yeah.
And then theta is that space right before sleep, kind of the, but that's where really creative ADD-ish stuff happens. That's where you're probably brilliant in that space. And then delta is deep sleep. And then gamma, the last one, the fifth of the nerd stuff here, is when you have aha moments. And so you've had some variance there.
It's I have.
Yeah, it's good, right?
It feels good. It's like, you know, yeah.
So you can learn how to control those. If you're beholden to only theta, you're not getting into flow state, which is what you described as skating, right? Where there's a complete absorption of time and action, a distortion of time and action and awareness kind of merge together and you're completely engaged in the present moment. You lose track of... Even awareness of where you are. It's amazing.
It's a beautiful thing.
It's the most amazing state. And so if theta is the one you spend most of the time in, it's hard to get to flow by just theta. You need to get to a little bit of beta.
Do you think that maybe more activity, more hockey, more...
No. I would say more conditioning and training of your mind. So like, do you have a mindfulness practice?
I do this guided meditation in the morning. It's 15 minutes where they talk and like, just concentrate on your breath and being present. I was thinking about doing an app because I have a really nice voice, I think.
You do. Mm-hmm.
So check this out, Michael. Mm-hmm. So she's like, right now she's like, okay, right now we're going to just breathe, feel your breath, focus on your breath. When thoughts come in, just, you don't throw them away. You can welcome them, but just maybe remind yourself with words like thinking. She says that. And then she says, rather, instead of rather, she says, rather than go there to a negative place. And she has it, and I just, 15 minutes go by fast.
We should write one together.
I'd love it.
Use your voice, and then.
You know, I think people would buy it. I would love to do that with you.
Let's do that.
Why don't you write one?
I'll write 20 of them.
You'll write 20 of them. I'll be the voiceover. And we'll do an app, and we'll, you know, it'll be like $5 for the app, and you get to hear all these great, you know, because it's coming from a mind like yours with a voice like mine.
Match made in heaven.
Dude, this would be great.
I think we should actually do a podcast together too.
I think that'd be great.
That'd be fun.
You need the yin and yang. You need the Mr. Red. What's his name? Johnny Carson and Mr. Red. That's a horse. We had Kristen Bell on the show. We have a bunch of people, but it's become therapy for me. And now I've told you that the show has sort of, we didn't know what it was at first. And now it's become like, hey, look at successful people. They've had faced adversity. They've done things that, you know, they're not perfect. And it makes you, again, you feel better about yourselves.
But, I love what you're doing with that.
Well, thanks. I'm figuring that out. But we do a therapy session. Now, I could say something based on this whole hour we've had, hour and 20 minutes or whatever. And then I want you to go, as my therapist, just what you think, your observation, what you would recommend. And you've sort of told me this, but it's sort of a therapeutic thing. Like, I'm your therapist right now, okay? Mm-hmm. So I'm your therapy. I would say, I think you've nailed it. I think, you know, your purpose is helping people, and you're helping people. I think you probably have enough money. So, you should give some free therapy to some people who really need it.
More than tea.
No, that's not true. I don't have therapy for you. Yeah. That's the reality.
Okay, so that being said, like, for real, like, I'm serious about it. Like, if you want to go grab a tea or whatever and have a conversation. But the way that I work is it's 8 hours in one day. And we roll up our sleeves and we do two meals often, because we're not going to starve each other. And it is on, and it is intense. And that's the...
Is there crying?
There's everything.
Like, if you had, like...
It doesn't have to be anything.
In 8 hours.
It doesn't have to be anything.
It doesn't have to be anything.
No.
You would just talk. Like, in other words, you would sit there and talk to me and go, hey, so, you know, tell me something about your family, about your life.
No.
You don't do that?
No, I'm not.
You don't want to know about that?
Yes and no. Like, is it... The context is of the history is important, because it shapes where you're coming from. But we are so complicated and multifaceted, textured, nuanced humans that it is not easy. And I love it. It's like this tapestry that you're building. Right now, you're building a tapestry, and there's triangles, and there's things that are layered on top of it, and some things are darker than others, and, you know, it doesn't make sense, and it kind of does. And it's just... So 8 hours is like the minimum starting place.
I have
really
this weird feeling, like I just have this vision of you and me in this big, giant, I think like a basketball arena. And we're just seeing like a high school basketball court, and there's nobody there. Maybe some weird coach in the background just going, what are they doing in there? And you and I are facing each other, and we're sitting on chairs looking at each other, and you're really close in our arm. We're wearing white shirts and they're rolled up, and we're just looking at each other, and you're leaning in. You're like, Michael, all right. And that's how it is. Now, what's the first thing you'd say to me? Not to give away all your stuff, because it's 8 hours and it's many times, but what's like the first thing you think you'd say to me?
But yeah, what I normally say to people is, okay,
let's have a hug.
No, that's not where we start.
Yeah,
no, we're not.
I mean, I would.
Let's hold hands, take off our shoes. No, it is, what do I need to understand about who you are? And I'll start there. Like, what do I need to understand? And so then you'll just go somewhere. You'll say, okay, well, let me go back to where I grew up or where I want to go or whatever. And so there's a toggling back and forth between the man that you're working on becoming and where you came from and the man you are today. And so we're toggling back and forth there. We're going up and down in emotions, meaning that sometimes people can go straight into feeling, and sometimes other people, we need to dance a little bit. You know, there's an art to all of this.
Sure.
But, and then, you know, in the background is just solid theory about how people work and recommended ways to train. So it's not complicated in that way. Like, it's pretty straightforward, but it's hard work. Both of us would be exhausted by the end of the day.
Exhausted.
No, exhausted.
And do you think I'd be a changed man in 8 hours?
No, what happens is we get to some, I think the goal at least is to get to some rich insight, like real insight about who you are and who you're
becoming.
I think
I would probably be embarrassed, and eventually I think I'd come out. I just say it and say, fuck, I don't care. I'm going to tell you.
For sure.
Just tell you how I feel, and I feel like I'm comfortable with you by that point. And I say some stuff, and you're like, you start to program, like figure out, okay.
Yeah, that's the linking. Yeah. But then, without honesty, I haven't met anyone on the world stage that is consistently extraordinary without real deep honesty. And that's what we miss. I think most of us miss about elite athletes and performers is that they have incredible feedback loops that hold them accountable, right? The world is watching, and there's tape, and there's coaches, and there's peers, and there's people saying, that was great, that's not good enough. That was great, that's not good. You and I, we don't get that. We don't get those incredibly accurate feedback loops. We're stuck with our own head.
Yeah.
You know, so having external feedback loops, no one does this world alone. So why not do the work with somebody who really sole interest, because you're paying them, is 100% dedicated to figuring out how you can be the best version of you. And they do it lovingly and intelligently and compassionately, and they love you up and kick your ass. Like, God bless it. I want that.
Yeah.
I always wanted that. And so
Can we have tea and then, look, it's on me, but can we do tea honestly? And it'll just be fun. It's going to be an hour tea. I'm not going to But can then you maybe refer me to someone
a 50-minute tea?
Yeah, who does what
in
you
your
do?
Office.
Yeah, but you can refer me to somebody.
Yeah, yes, I'd be happy to. But let's start with a tea.
Listen, I'm going to say this, and this is it. I'm just going to say this. This is honest. My opinion. Rob smiling at me. Sully growling. This conversation is not only helping me, but it's helping anybody. There might be one person out there, maybe five, and maybe one of those five is being helped, which is a ripple effect.
Mission minded.
It's been a joy. I was a little nervous.
Thanks,
you were a little nervous, but now there's this understanding. And what's your Twitter handle?
@ Michael Gervais, GERVAIS.
And Instagram?
Finding Mastery.
And that's your podcast?
FindingMastery.net. And then LinkedIn.
I think you guys, if you've listened, you've already listened to it at this point, if you listen, but you gotta, look at what this guy's doing.
Thanks,
it's pretty sensational. And I'm going to go give John Ryan a big kiss and a hug. And my other buddy in Seattle, Mike Allen.
Oh, yeah. You're friends with Mike?
Yeah. I think Mike actually made our introduction.
I think you're right.
And you were like, who the fuck is Michael Rosenbaum? I don't know. I'm working with fucking the Seattle Seahawks.
What's up, Mike?
But thank you for allowing me to be inside of you.
Oh, yeah. That sounded weird, but I appreciate it.
But the show's inside of you.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it. Yeah.
Awesome.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band and they must think this kid must have just been handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.